If you're listening to this podcast, you probably have an interest in global affairs. My name's Garrison, and I'm the host of The New Diplomatist, and I wanted to say a special thank you to each and every one of you who tune in to listen to the latest interviews with ambassadors, analysts, and experts. But if you're interested in getting even more out of The New Diplomatist, I'd encourage you to visit our Patreon page. A special thank you this month to our ambassador-level supporter, Jeff Flores. Jeff, we appreciate your support. We have a great interview in store for you today. Enjoy. Everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the New Diplomatist Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Garrison Morado, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, a personal friend of mine, and someone who I admire, Mr. Eitan Wallace. Eitan, it is an honor to have you on the New Diplomatist Podcast.
Well, let me tell you, Garrison, it's an honor to be here, and thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the listeners and a little bit about your impressive background, both at USC and in journalism, both at the national and local level?
Well, thank you. It's great to be here, and I'll tell you, I'll begin with where I grew up, San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles in Southern California. I had a great upbringing up in North Hollywood, and from there, out of high school, went to USC for the most part, and there graduated double major broadcast journalism and political science. Had a wonderful time there, learned a lot, and I should also mention that I did briefly attend Chapman University for 1 year, but during my time at USC, I really had amazing internships at KNBC-TV, which is the NBC flagship station in Los Angeles, Universal City, and then also had an honor to intern with NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt at the Los Angeles West Coast Bureau. Learned a lot there as well, and then graduated in 2018, and I've since been with KGET, the NBC affiliate in Bakersfield, California, where I've served as a general assignment reporter and local government and politics reporter as well. So it's all been great for the last 2 years at KGET. Learned a lot, reported a lot, gotten to know this great community in Kern County, and just grateful for where I've been so far in my life. Looking forward to the future, but it's been great so far. So that's a little bit of an introduction about me, and thanks for having me again.
Absolutely. Well, it's a wealth of knowledge, and it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast, not only as a friend, but also the experience you bring to the table. And for those of you who don't know, you know, I've been raised in Kern area myself, but for those who aren't perhaps familiar with that region of California, not quite as notable as LA, but if you take Bakersfield, the main city inside of Kern County, and you don't observe the oddly drawn city limit lines, we're talking about the fifth largest metro zone in California, so it's actually a significantly large area. Let's turn to the topic at hand, which is journalism as a whole in America, you know, and obviously you yourself have a good appreciation of this, of course, because it is your career and your expertise. But I think we can all agree that journalism is important, but it is something that's had a bit of a rocky year, because although it is a public service and there's a lot of focus on the role, rightful focus on the role that journalism plays inside American democracy, protector of truth and something that holds the public to transparency and holding the political officers to account and so on, it is ultimately a business, and the business end's been a little bit rough this year. There was some information from journalism.org talking about how newspaper median revenue amongst the publicly traded big newspapers down 42% this year. Cable TV, oddly enough, is up 41%, and network TV up 11%. Would you say that's largely a result of the pandemic increasing digitalization of our society, or do you think it's more the result of people are stuck at home and just aren't going out to purchase newspapers as much? And do you feel like that's a large shift that will last beyond the pandemic?
Well, that's a great question. I'll tell you, when it comes to newspapers, for instance, and that statistic you mentioned at the beginning, it's just very sad, I think. But when it comes to newspapers, in particular local newspapers, unfortunately, that's been happening way before the pandemic, probably since the early 2000s, if not before that, that newspaper revenue and jobs across newsrooms in local newspapers, in fact, have decreased by more than half since the early 2000s, I've seen. So the pandemic, though, I think has been a factor to kind of increase that lack of revenue and decrease in jobs across local newspapers. And that's a real shame, because if you think of local newspapers, we're not just talking about the big guys like Washington Post or New York Times. We're talking about these smaller operations, like operations we've seen in Burbank and Glendale and Pasadena. A lot of those newspapers in the San Fernando Valley, just in this pandemic, announced they are closing. They're shutting their doors for good. And that's too bad, because these newspapers, you know, unlike what a lot of the news cycle seems to be about President Trump or what happened at the White House in Washington, these newspapers are talking about what's happening in your home and your school board, your teachers, your faith leaders, you know, what's happening at the local park, what are kids in your neighborhood doing, all of that. And you don't get that. That leads to what's called a news desert, which is a phrase as it might sound to you. You'll have no idea what's happening in your community. At the end of the day, something that got me into news is the following phrase that I really love that Conan Nolan told me. He's the chief political reporter at NBC LA. He told me this: news is about people. Hmm. That's where you get into news. That's why I got into news. You know, you can watch the national cable news or whatever. You can do all that. That's fine. But your local news is the news that's telling you about people in your community. It's about your community. And when we don't have that in news deserts and these local smaller newspapers are going out of business, unfortunately, that's not just bad for democracy because you don't know what's happening with your local leaders, but it's also bad for your community. You do not know what's happening in your community. Unfortunately, the bad things happening in your community, which is very important, just like crime and whatnot, just as the good things, like what I just saw yesterday in Bakersfield, a toy drive for kids who need, you know, Christmas presents and whatnot. You don't know any of that that's happening. And I think that's just not good for democracy in general. But to go back to your question, yeah, I think the pandemic has certainly made it more difficult for those smaller operations and local newspaper shops. I will add, though, that I know, as you mentioned, perhaps more people are staying home, and as a result, they're watching TV, and so they're watching cable news. As far as I know, they actually are, in this market at least, watching more local news at this time of year. But it's been tough, I think, on the revenue side, as you mentioned. Let me just make it clear also, people often believe that the journalists know all about the revenue side. The good news is there's a reason why they say news and sales are separate, and that's because and most news operations have a separate sales department, just like at our station. We have it upstairs, rarely interact with the salespeople. We're not supposed to worry about that. We're not even, it's funny, you see on social media all the time, people say, oh, they only did this story for ratings, or they only did this to make money. That's not really true. That's when someone makes a comment like that on social media, they don't know really what they're talking about with the news business. I only do a story because I think it will benefit the community. I think it's of news value to the community. My job is to worry about news gathering and news commentary, presenting the news, and then people upstairs, they worry about getting that revenue. What I can say, though, is when they make the sales upstairs, when restaurants are going out of business, when car dealerships are not doing as well, when your local businesses are shut down, well, who's going to advertise them on TV? So right. from a journalistic standpoint, I can tell you, yes, absolutely, when businesses are shutting down, revenue is going down. The only interesting thing is this was an election year, so you had constantly campaign ads.
Yes. during big market for it this year. Yes, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So that may have saved the revenue a little bit. I'm not exactly sure about the specific numbers, but I can't say that there was millions of dollars. I can't confirm just from my own reporting. For instance, in the 21st congressional district here in California, more than $1 million reserved in TV ad space pre-pandemic, and all those ads went on for Congressman T.J. Cox and Congressman Dale Valdeo, and
wow,
that was nonstop on the airwaves here. So that probably was a good thing for the news business in that sense.
And so that was fascinating. I could take this so many different directions. My mind's reeling, but I want to jump back in again onto that news desert concept with local TV, because local stations really are the unsung heroes, the bulwark of American democracy and news transparency across the nation. And it's interesting, if you look at the polls, you know, nationwide, consistently over the last 20 years, you know, and this, people like to blame it on the current partisanship, but this goes back to the Clinton era, decline in the faith of Americans in the national news organizations, both in the journalist personalities themselves, as well as the channels. And of course, that varies station to station and, you know, bipartisan leanings and so on. But one thing's pretty consistent: people trust their local news station, according to the polling. Do you think it is that personal aspect that really makes the difference? And if so, what things could maybe the bigger network affiliates and the cable stations, what could they learn from, say, a KGET 17 or another local station to earn back the trust of viewers in such a polarized age?
That is another fantastic question. You know, I think it kind of goes back to what I was saying in the beginning when it comes to local news. News is about people. And by that, I don't mean just to report about what President Trump is doing every day or the stimulus package, you know, in Congress, whether they can get it passed or not. I mean, go and find someone who's impacted by the policies, whether good or bad, whether they're impacted positively or negatively, and show that person on TV in your community and show how government is impacting people. And that's why I think people have more faith in local news. I think they see, here's how it affects our community. Here's what it means for me. When you watch a national news show, as important as it is to see what the president and secretary of state and other important leaders in our country are doing, it's not always clear how that impacts you, Bakersfield, for instance, 3,000 miles away from Washington. Well, when you're reporting at home, you can make that more clear as to stimulus checks and other things that's going on in Congress right now, how that will impact the everyday person back in Kern County or wherever you're reporting as a journalist. So I would hope that national TV would stress that, the emphasis on how what happens 3,000 miles away impacts people in their own communities. Now, you know, it's good to get the press secretary and others from the administration on the news, but what I don't see usually on cable news is those people talking about everyday Americans. Instead, it's all about, on both sides of the aisle, oh, the Democrats did this, or oh, the Republicans did that, or oh, yes, this and that.
Yes, indeed.
You know what? That's noise. People, it doesn't get to how it impacts you at home, and right, that's what local government says. I don't get in the weeds of the Democrats or the Republicans or this, they're blaming that or that blaming this. I just get to, how will this impact you? News is about you. It's about people. It's not about who's doing this. And yeah, if there's bickering in between you, you have to mention a stalemate and what's happening and why Congress can't get to what they're doing to impact you at home. But at the end of the day, I don't see a lot of that on cable news. The last thing I'll say is on NBC Nightly News, every single night, which is very impressive, I don't think a lot of young Americans watch the whole half hour of the national news every night. But it's some of the best journalism you'll see. David Muir on ABC World News Tonight, Lester Holt on Nightly News. I watch it every single night. They have incredible journalism stories that really does feature, I would say, personal, impactful journalism. And we're talking about, especially in COVID, they don't just mention the numbers. I see Miguel Almaguer getting in those hospitals, NBC Nightly News, almost every single night, and talking to families and patients and nurses dealing with what they're dealing with. So you don't just see a number on screen. You're seeing the personal impact that's happening. That's what journalism is about. And I would encourage anybody listening to this to just watch for five nights in a row, NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt, 30-minute newscast. I think you'll be blown away. Not only does that newscast not have any mistakes in it, I'm not just talking about content mistakes, but graphics. And it's amazing what they've done now with journalism. But further than that, the personal stories, even from a national newscast, it is impressive. It's amazing. And I worry that in this time, when everything's on digital, you can read one article here, one article there. You're getting things in it comes in small fragments, if you will. You're not getting the news all in one newscast. And as a result, I get it, news has become more personalized in that sense, and that's a good thing that you can get it right at your phone. But then you're only getting the news that you want to read or you want to see. You're not watching a whole half hour. This is what happened today. This is what we're seeing. I would just go and encourage people to do that. And if you have an issue with Nightly News or Lester Holt, tell me about it. Let me know. I'm an open-minded guy. I want to hear what you don't like about it. But I will tell you, I think for the most part, you will find it, and this is to the listeners, you'll find it very impressive what Lester Holt and the people at NBC Nightly News do night after night.
You know, and it sounds like he's really borrowed or perhaps even instigated that playbook you said about focusing on news as people and really treating the viewership as the audience that's intended rather than a political party. And I think that's so important to me because I know as a viewer, I'm just speaking as someone who's very ignorant of the journalistic process other than just, you know, consuming the news, that to me, it almost seems like a lot of the cable networks, you know, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, it's almost like the moment someone says the name, you know what side of the aisle they're on. You know,
right.
You know exactly what, you know, what they're going to say and how they're going to spin the news. But if you were to rattle off a list of a dozen or two dozen local stations from across the country or perhaps a couple of these more responsible flagship shows like Lester Holt that you mentioned, you know, if someone says the local news at this corner of Chicago or like yourself in Bakersfield or this corner of Seattle, I can't tell you right off the bat whether they're left or right leaning because it's not the focus. The focus, like you're saying, is on the journalism and the good old fashioned journalism and with the people. And I think that's so important in this era. But I know you mentioned you're not on the money side of things, but perhaps at least opening up the discussion on distribution. You know, local news is a critical part. Obviously, that's what we're focusing on. But with the rise of streaming, You know, you have to contend with so many more distractions now than Americans had even just a decade ago or 2 decades ago. Many times not even on cable packages. You know, we say cable TV, but a lot of people, they've gone to Roku sticks or to an Apple TV or a smart TV from Samsung. Is that impacting the outlook for your style of news and the local level that, you know, maybe some of these streaming services don't carry the local news? Or how does that work heading into, you know, this next decade?
Right. Well, first of all, that's heading into this next decade, and we're already seeing it. News, it's no longer what they call appointment television, which you might have seen back in the 70s, 80s, or even 90s, where, you know, people work throughout the day, and then they get home, and they wait for the 5 o'clock news, and that's when they get their news. It's no longer like that. As you mentioned, with streaming and everything digital now, people can get it right when it happens. You get a notification about an important event taking place at the White House, you can watch it live on your phone now. You can do all that. Whereas, you know, 30 years ago, you had to wait for the 5 o'clock news to see what had happened. So we live in a different world. People want to know what's happening now. And that's both a good thing and a bad thing, I would say. The good thing about it is, you know, it makes people more informed and they can give more accessibility to what's happening, you know, thousands of miles away. I would say it's a challenging thing in the sense of, for journalists, to try to get the whole story there. Oftentimes now, it's unfortunate that it seems it's always about who can be first, who can get the attention here. And on Twitter, it's, you know, Ted Koppel, a former ABC News journalist, said, and I'm paraphrasing here, you know, Twitter is all about, it seems, in this modern day of journalism, whereas it used to be just three networks kind of competing for the news and the content of the news, now it's a whole thousands and thousands of different Twitter users and journalists trying to compete for just a little fragment of your attention, just trying to get that little thing out there that might not be the whole story, but, oh, here's a little scoop on this thing, here's a little scoop on that, you know. And I think that can be sometimes a little bit of an issue, because then you're not getting the whole story. But when it comes to streaming, overall, I think it's good that it provides, you know, more accessibility to content and what's happening to Americans, yet at the same time, it also opens the door for also what Mr. Koppel had said, and this includes cable news, where Americans can tune in to get their ideology, not to get their content, if that makes sense. You will tune in, and by you, I mean the average viewer now can tune in to listen to what news works in the ideology of their part. They're not just listening to unbiased news anymore. They can tune in to any online site that can go one way or the other, left or right. And then they can become even more radicalized as a result. And that's unfortunate. And I don't mean radicalized like they're radicals or extremists as a result. So then they will only start watching and believing that own site. And I would encourage anybody listening, it's fine to listen to, if you want to news or commentary that goes with your ideology. I would just encourage you, try to go the other side too. Just see what they're saying. If you want to watch MSNBC, great. But then go to Fox News. If you want to watch Fox, go to MSNBC. If you want to watch one American news that the president loves, great, but then go to MSNBC. Just do that and see what's happening. I think the best type of journalist, and hopefully this really translates into the best type of American, is one who's open-minded and one who always tries to see all sides to a story. And I would hope that Americans do the same thing. And in this time of digital, you don't have to do that anymore. You can just go to your favorite commentator, and that's it. That's your ideology. That's what you believe is fact, and that's the world we live in now, and that's too bad, because confirmation bias, people accuse the news of bias, but I would also go one step further and say there's now a much larger viewer presence that probably has a confirmation bias, where if they don't like the news that's being reported on what's supposed to be an unbiased network, sometimes it's fair that if something is biased, I agree, but other times it's that it doesn't align with their ideology, and therefore the entire news that they're heard that day is must be fake and false and misinformation, and the person who reported it must have an agenda. I don't think that's healthy for democracy.
And, you know, it's a perfect segue, because the next section, I have a couple more questions for you, because I do want to be respectful of your time, but, you know, next section to really focus on for me would be, segueing off what you just said, if you look at an organization like Reporters Without Borders, their World Press Freedom Index, you know, as an American, I'm pretty comfortable with and used to seeing my country ranked top 3, top 5, maybe top 10 on most things around the world. And yet, when I look at the most free countries when it comes to journalism, those that have the best respect for them, that the journalists can operate without fear and have the greatest amounts of transparency and access and so on. I've got Norway at number one, Finland number two, Denmark number three, then Sweden, the Netherlands, Jamaica, Costa Rica, Switzerland, New Zealand, Portugal. There's the top 10. I got to go down past 20, past 30, past 35, past 40, and then right above, and no offense to Papua New Guinea, but they're 46. We're 45th, according to the current rankings in 2020. That's just the least bit scary to me, and that's not something I've normally tracked until I was prepping for this interview. And I'm like, 45th out of 180 countries. How did we get there? How do we get back up, in your view?
Well, that's a great question. I think it took decades. I think people on both sides of the aisle actually will tell you that even if we're hearing from certain political leaders right now criticism of the press, it existed before. The problem with trust in our press, but even more than that, the problem with, I think, as you're mentioning, a safety for the press and faith in the press, and if the press can operate safely, I think that happened before our current time. The decrease in the safety there actually diminished probably before, and that probably is a result of more and more outlets getting on the scene, more and more people thinking that it, you know, losing their faith in journalism, and now to this current day where perhaps people see us as the enemy. Unfortunately, and you know, I'm not the Taliban. I'm not ISIS. You know, I'm just another American shopping at the Vons in your community center. You know, but unfortunately, a lot of people don't see it that way, and it's resulted in that where now a lot of journalists are seen as the enemy. Again, that's not placing blame on one party or one person. That's to say, it's been happening over a long period of time, and now it's just kind of more out there. But it's happened before that, and I would say that the blame really goes to just the rhetoric that's been happening in this country, not just in the last 4 years, but over the last probably 20 to 30 years. And I think that actually even Barack Obama, you know, I would say that even Barack Obama and Donald Trump could agree with that, which is that they would agree that there was a rhetoric before this time that in this nation, it was tough. Being a journalist perhaps became a little bit more dangerous over time because of just the rhetoric that's been happening in the current political atmosphere over the last 20 or 30 years. Slowly but surely, if you're on one side of the aisle, the other side must be bad. Or if you're on the other side must be bad. Whereas we're not just seen as Americans anymore. We're seen as, if you either blue or red, and no matter what, often things the other side is seen as the enemy, no matter who you are. And that, as a result, I think, has made it more dangerous for journalists out there, and people out there have become more extreme and to a certain extent radicalized. And if they don't see the news that agrees with their ideology on TV, and by agree, I don't mean that it's the opposite ideology. I just mean it's the news as it's presented that's supposed to be unbiased, but they don't see it that way. And that's how we've gotten to where we are today, I think.
You know, and dovetailing off that, it's funny. I'm one of those people who finds the random old historical videos on YouTube from the 60s and 70s and watches interviews with politicians who, you know, during their rise to power and so on. And I was thumbing through some channels. I found an interview, and I forget the name of the reporter now, but he was a CBS anchor back in the early 70s. And they asked him at the time about the rise of entertainment news. And that was a topic 50 years ago, apparently. He kind of warned of it and of shows that were more designed to dazzle than inform. And did touch on some of the stuff we spoke about earlier about speaking to people. But what would you say in regards to, you know, not to pick on any particular outlets, but say like a Fox News or like an MSNBC, you know, you have, say, Rachel Maddow on one extreme and maybe like Tucker Carlson on the other. You know, they're pretty easy to identify and say, okay, these blur the lines between getting some entertainment and venting some steam at the end of the day with real news. But then I think there's more subtle issues too. And again, not to pick on any one person because there's many examples. The one I think of is Jim Acosta at CNN. Uh-huh. You know, he's a good reporter overall, but he had that famous made-for-TV moment, literally, where he cornered Trump and he wouldn't sit down at the press conference a couple years ago, and he was shouting back at him. A White House intern comes and takes the mic from him, and he kind of flings himself backward like she shoved him, and it kind of became this whole, you know, moment for the press and photos, and it became a big deal. You know, what would you say about the journalism industry? Is there a bit of a responsibility, not just on the viewer end, but also maybe on some of the bigger networks, to kind of rein in some of that behavior to get it more focused back on the news? Or do you feel like some of that's just part of the business?
Absolutely. Well, I think that, you know, first of all, I would hope, you know, I would say that people who watch Rachel Maddow and Tucker Carlson and others, I say, good for you. You know, listen to the commentary, enjoy it. You know, it's part of our democracy. Great. You know, I listen to both of them every now and then, and you know, it's interesting to listen to. What I will also say is, I hope you understand the commentators and that they're not news sources.
Yes.
And they can offer interesting commentary, and they make great essays every night. You know, trying to make a point, and you can agree or disagree with it, but that's not news. And I hope people know that. And so, great, go and listen to them. Enjoy whatever they have to offer. But I would also hope you watch David Muir or Lester Holt, or if you don't like those guys, whoever it is that can trust for unbiased news that doesn't align with an ideology. And so that's what I would say to that, first of all. And about the thing about entertainment, you know, cable news in some ways has become entertainment to try to lure in people, which is fine. It's a tactic to try to get viewers. But just know that, you know that. I don't think local news has become that. I also don't think necessarily NBC Nightly News or those half-hour national newscasts have been able to become that. Now, as for Mr. Acosta and others, I think it's a good question. Here's what I'll say is that what I've seen is that when someone like Mr. Acosta does that, the right goes in and understandably gets frustrated and, you know, says that's not appropriate. But then when the White House press corps, often with the president, doesn't get like that, then the left gets angry. And so my hope idea is, geez, nobody wins here.
Yeah, it's a catch-22 for both sides, yeah.
Exactly. So that's really tough. Now, I will say this, though. You know, without talking about Mr. Acosta specifically or whatnot, I'll just say I would hope that any journalist, if the president from any party or the Speaker of the House or whoever it is being deceitful, making false claims, lying about it, that they'll call it out because the American people need it. Those people, whether it be the Democrats or the Republicans, they can go have their rallies and their great supporters who go to those rallies and wait there for hours to see the person. Good, go. You know, go to those rallies. But that's where the president and others can make claims, whatever they want, and it's going to go unchecked.
True.
But when you're in the White House press room or the East Room of the White House, where I believe that specific event happened.
I think it was, East Room, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the journalists should try to ask about claims that have been made that need to be held accountable. Now, the only thing I'll say is I've gone back and watched President George W. Bush's press conferences from that same exact room for the invasion of Iraq, let's say in 2003, while President Reagan. How do I put this? I'll just say it as fairly as I can.
The president sets the temperature.
Well, there you go. The president sets the temperature, and so does the White House press secretary. And even Dana Perino on Fox News, she's regular on Fox News. She was the White House press secretary under President Bush. She had a great relationship with journalists. She ran amazing White House press conferences. You know, and they got content out. The White House got what they needed to get out, and so did journalists. And I thought, if you look back and watch it, it was very cordial. We need to go back to that. I'm not saying it's one person's fault or another. I'm just saying the whole atmosphere now, the temperature needs to be lowered, as you mentioned. And President Bush, whether it was Tony Snow, who was his press secretary, Dana Perino, or he had others, you know, Ari Fleshler, whoever it might be, they were smart guys, and they did a very good job with the press. And I would just encourage people who wonder what it's like to see those types of press conferences, go back on YouTube. Watch President Bush's press conference before the invasion of Iraq. You'll see it was a cordial but fair and, I would say, tough press conference, but tough in a fair way. I would encourage people to go back and watch. You'll see people were asking him about Saddam Hussein and others. You know, you had Chris Wallace, I believe, in the room. Same with President Reagan way back when. You know, it was tough but fair. It was cordial. It was how it should be. It was always about more of the people than it was about the party. Now, you know, we're in the White House press room, and however you feel about Nancy Pelosi, why are we having a White House press conference where we have Nancy Pelosi in a hair salon in California? Why is that airing in the White House press room? You know, you can criticize it. Trust me, I've covered it. I've had people I've interviewed who are very angry about it. They have legitimate concerns. But why is that in the White House press room?
Right.
Have we gotten to such a low level where we're showing what Nancy Pelosi in a hair salon, you know, breaking the rules? You know, I get the point made, but why is that at the White House press room?
There's a relevance to location, too, you know.
And I'm sorry?
There's a relevance to location as well, that, okay, cover the story, but let's cover it where it's relevant. That's not where it's relevant.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And in that case, that was just more bad Washington there, going back and forth between Democrats and Republicans. And I can also assure you that just to be fair here, because people might listen to this and say, well, because the Democrats have done the same thing. And I'll say, absolutely. just like that was in the White House press room, the Nancy Pelosi thing. I'm sure Democrats have done the exact same thing. And I'm just saying, enough, everybody, lower the temperature, get back to civilized, tough, fair interviews. And I think Dana Perino would agree with that.
That was a very brave and a very accurate answer to a difficult sequence of questions, so I appreciate it, because it's a difficult time to discuss these things, but it's important. And this brings me to my final question, and then I'll let you go. Why do we care? You know, why does all this matter at the end of the day? You mentioned press being there for the people, but even in a greater historical sense, you know, if we go all the way back to the founding, if you read the Federalist Papers, you know, you get back to Federalist 72, you have Alexander Hamilton saying the administration of government in its largest sense comprehends all the operations of the body politic. And, you know, just that kind of idea that government really does encompass more than just the president, just Congress. It encompasses the people. It encompasses the news. It encompasses our institutions, as you mentioned, faith organizations and so on. And when that breaks down, democracy itself has begun to fail. And you have a very powerful personal story along these lines when it comes to your grandfather, who lived in Europe, who had a home in Czechoslovakia, during the rise of Hitler. Could you talk a little bit about your family story and how some of that played out? Because I think, in a sense, it's not the whole story, but part of that story, at the very least, was the failure of free institutions in Europe to check the rise of someone like Hitler, who was a demagogue who operated off of false propaganda and so on. Can you talk a little bit about how that story has probably influenced you in your life and your decision to go into journalism?
Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you bring that up. And my grandfather, he was born in Czechoslovakia at the time in 1928. And in 1938, 10 years later, he was still there, a 10-year-old boy. And he remembers some people, you know, in his community saying, you know, speaking about, you know, the rise of Hitler and whatnot, and what's going to happen to Europe. But you know, at the time, people thought, who could have imagined what was going to happen in the next 7 years? You know, that's what people were saying. Oh, you know, it's just another anti-Semite. We've seen them before. It's going to come and go. Nobody could have imagined. But his grandfather, he said, knew something was different this time. And he had seen to it that my grandfather and his family needed to get out. And sure enough, my grandfather got out of Czechoslovakia 33 days before the Nazis invaded that country. Wow. And he arrived in America in early 1939, and it was that story, I think, that inspired me. America, the land of the free, and the land where people who have been unfortunately wronged and whatnot elsewhere could look to America, just as my grandfather did, and came here and lived an amazing life, and a life that would no doubt have been able to happen elsewhere. And my grandfather tells me he remembers the last time seeing his grandparents in 1938. They stayed behind. They couldn't. They were too old to travel to America. And that was the last time he ever saw them. And it's presumed that they passed away in the concentration camps. They were murdered there. So I think that's a story that goes to show America has always been a land of hope and a beacon of hope and a beacon of freedom in the world. And I believe that beacon of freedom is the First Amendment. The freedom of the press and the freedom of religion. I've always been a proud person of my faith of Judaism, and I've always also now in my career been a proud journalist, serving the community, I hope, and providing the community with important information, and being able to do so in a country that can do a career that would not have been possible in World War II Europe, where you're right, everything was propaganda, and whatever you had said in Germany or wherever it was, Czechoslovakia or whatever in Eastern Europe between 1938 and 1945, you couldn't have been able to do that. A free press would not have been allowed. And I'll say, you know, that inspired me, I think, my grandfather's story, to really value freedom. And part of freedom is being able to go to a synagogue on the Jewish Sabbath, or being able to be on television and have a free press, or read your newspaper that's critical of your congressman, or read the newspaper that says the mayor and this, or the city council member here, you know, hid this or didn't tell you that. In Europe in 1945, if a newspaper did that, that's it. You know, you say goodbye. So I think it's an amazing country we live in. The last thing I'll say is kind of what President George W. Bush said on Ellen way back when he was promoting his book. He went on Ellen. He said something about the press, which was that he didn't always like what the press said. In fact, you could argue the press wasn't very nice to him. But at the end of the day, he said something very interesting. He said, "Power is addictive, and you need a free and fair, independent press to hold the powerful to account." And I 100% agree with him. It's not to say you always need to butt heads with the elected officials. I can tell you here in Kern County, I have a great relationship with a lot of the elected officials from both sides of the aisle. But it also is to say that when news happens and the elected officials say something or you can go and report that and take it a step further and look up how that will impact you, the viewer at home. And I must say, it has been an honor, even with all the hate out there from journalists, it's been an honor to serve the community and to be as fair as I can and get to know the community and report on the community in as fair and as accurate as a way as possible. And I feel very good about that.
Well, and I can say it's been an honor as a podcast to have someone who can tell you such a powerful and such a timelessly relevant story, personal story, into journalism and into this topic. And I can say it's no surprise that you are the recipient of awards ranging from the Hearst Organization to the Society of Professional Journalists. So it's been an absolute honor to have you on today, Tom. We really appreciate you taking time to come on.
Hey, Garrison, thank you so much. And allow me to congratulate you. Probably too humble to say anything. You just got your master's degree.
I just want to say
congratulations. Very significant. No doubt, any community where you will serve in elected office and or government will be lucky to have you at their service. So thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. I really appreciate the moment.